Welcome back to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. In this episode, Colin is joined one more time by Ronan Pesser to discuss how to build your SDR team. Ronan shares valuable insights on the financial considerations, talent assessment, and hiring strategies for building a successful sales development team. Colin, back to you.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, and we've got Ronan Pesser back on the show. Ronan, you want to give people just a quick introduction and before we jump into a topic that I know you love talking about.
Thanks, Colin. Great to be back. Ronan Pesser here. I do fractional sales development, meaning I build out your SDR team for you or help you optimize it. Cold call training, but also leadership development training. That's me.
Short and sweet. Love it. Love it. We had Ronan on recently and we talked about a lot of great things about lots of nuggets for first time leaders that, or even leaders that maybe have, been around a while and are looking to improve culture. Lots of good nuggets in there of just sort of some things that you can do to have a better culture as a leader that really do impact results, especially for sales teams. And I can tell you a lot of the bad behaviors and, you know, the things that we talked about are pretty much kind of the norm for a lot of sales team environments. But today we're going to talk about, how to build your SDR team, which is something that I know you're passionate about. Let's just talk about, maybe for a first-time leader or newer leader, what are some things that they need to be thinking about when they're maybe building a team for the first time?
Yeah, this is something I'm passionate about because it has so many moving parts. Get a few of them right and you can see like wild success, but get a few of them wrong and it's like, what did I do wrong? Why doesn't this work? I think when it comes to making this a little bit more specific, there's two typical kinds of clients that I work with. So that helps paint the backdrop for like who this is for. The first one is the growing VC-backed tech company, like the startup Series A, Series B. This is the kind of company that has already identified product market fit. And now they're looking to add another channel or two to increase their pipeline and then their revenue. Really typical strategy. By no means is it going away anytime soon. The second use case and kind of client that I work with is typically a bootstrapped or already profitable organization that is now exploring new pipeline channels. And they have never done traditional sales development or outbound. So they already have maybe 15, 20 years, 10 years, something, but a good chunk of time operating in their market. And they are profitable. They have a large organization, resources. I have a client just like that, a value-added reseller in the hardware space. They've been around for a while. And now they're just looking to add another layer on top of their go-to-market strategy. Mm-hmm. Either way, there's one thing that's true. Sales development is newer to them. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about it, you got to think big picture. So there's the finances of it. Do the numbers make sense? Then there's the talent component. Who are the people that make sense? Ultimately, marrying the two is going to be the job of someone like myself. I call myself an integrator because I'm putting these two things together. And when it comes to the actual numbers, it's pretty straightforward. What you want to look for is, do I know already what my back of napkin funnel looks like? What is the value of a new conversation? And if you can have that number figured out, you can model out a whole lot of things that you can then go test with a team. I can test if I know that the value of every new conversation to my company's revenue could be $15,000 or $20,000, then I know if I go find a way to create another 100 of these, I should be able to project out that pipeline. On the talent side, this is usually where people struggle because it's really hard to assess the right talent fit. But this comes back to the heart, the DNA, and the blood of the company. Like, what makes someone, let's take Leadium, what makes someone at Leadium a Leadium person? What is going to lead to someone's promotion at Leadium? There's going to be something different there than what leads to someone's promotion at a company like Salesforce. They have different codes of conduct. What is considered good, bad, what's considered praiseworthy, promotion worthy, and fire worthy, or, you know, discipline worthy. So those are the two big picture 10,000 foot view of like how I think about it before I get into like the details of it all.
Yeah. Well, I think the interesting thing is the first piece there, right? Like the math, even the back of the napkin math, it always shocks me at how misinformed people are about their own sales math. Like sometimes you talk to leaders and they literally have no idea of the value of conversation, or, you know, you start asking questions about certain sales conversions and you get kind of a range or a around 20% to 30%. It's like understanding these numbers is kind of table stakes if you're a sales leader. Like you have to know these things, right? And maybe, you know, it's a smaller company and it's like you got founder kind of playing that sales leader role, right? So that's understandable, maybe. But even then, like these things need to be known, right? So what are some things, let's talk a little bit. I want to dig into that a little bit. Like what are some things that they need to look at inside of their organization to understand that back of the napkin sales math to be able to figure out, like, is this a viable option for us to go down building an SDR team?
So I'm always a little bit surprised, like you, when I'm speaking with like really successful business people who know how important finance is. And finance is the language of business, right? So they understand that, yet they don't have the language of sales down. It's just a sub part of finance, essentially. It's just another form of metrics to measure. I know all the people out there who are really into analytics are going to geek out on this, but this is the kind of stuff that I'll do when I'm trying to assess with the potential client. Like, look, does it even make sense for you to invest? This isn't a cheap thing. This is going to be a sizable investment. You've got salaries, benefits. That's going to be your biggest cost. Then you've got technology. Then you've got the time investment, which is so underestimated how important the time part of it is just to see this thing work out. So you've got some numbers. When you think about it, you could work backwards. You could say, I have a revenue goal. Let's work back from that. How many deals do I need? Do I have ways of segmenting my deals? So for those of you who aren't familiar with this, most companies have stages to their deals if it's not like a one or two call close. If you're selling to a large, another business, B2B space, you're selling larger deals, you're likely to break them down into stages. The most common setup that I've seen has something like first call, a qualified opportunity, some sort of sometimes trial period or analysis period, some negotiation period, some legal period, and then it's a customer. That's like the very standard setup that I've seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Right there, you have your first funnel.
And then I think the other thing that a lot of times is overlooked is people not considering all of the numbers, which is another, you know, basic finance thing here of what the fully loaded cost of an SDR is, right? Like it's not just the salary, it's the tech, it's the anybody managing them. It's, you know, all of these other factors of like, you know, how do we, so maybe it'd be helpful to break down when you're looking at like, hey, how many SDRs can we afford to start with? And how do we actually have that back of the napkin math of like, what is the fully all in cost of, you know, hiring these folks?
The big costs in the like pie, the biggest one is salary for the person. Then you have benefits and tax. When you're thinking about tech, I think most tech companies have a strange belief that everything has to be software. Like, so they end up buying way too much technology, way too many tools. When, especially in the world of sales development, you don't need a whole lot to get going. I mean, if you really want to scrap it and be super like economical about it, you just need a phone, an email, and a way to get information about people you're going to be like calling and reaching out to. But typically the last thing is location. Like where are these people going to sit? That will matter. There's a whole growing space of I don't know what it's offshore sales development, but it's folks in countries that are English speakers, but don't live in America. So they require less. That is growing for a reason. You know, the cost of it is a lot lower than the cost of a salaried employee in San Francisco. I think in California, the minimum salary requirement is something like $64,000. So there's that cost adds up pretty fast. In addition to that, it's also like you just said, who's going to support this team? If this team is making phone calls, where are they going to get that data from? Is there someone internally who's going to help them set up the process of finding a new contact, getting that number into their dialer so that they can make the call? Is there someone who's going to set up the process for checking emails so that they don't bounce, so that the SDR can go ahead and send the email without having deliverability issues? That's usually something that will be like chalked up to a RevOps, a sales ops person, but that's a whole nother role. That's more cost associated and opportunity cost of what else that person could be working on. Ultimately, when it's like all in the US, I usually am looking at somewhere between 100 and 120,000 per SDR as the all in cost. And that's been from experience, different types of companies, different industries. But typically that's the range that it ends up hitting.
Okay. And let's pivot a little bit here. Now that I think people understand, like, hey, how do we actually look like from both sides? Does the math make sense? But then how do we pick the right people, right? Because there's things, I mean, one thing I'll add to that too, is you got to factor in ramp time, like reasonable ramp time, right? You can't expect somebody's going to get in the seat in the first 30, 45 days. They're going to be, you know, 100% of quota. You know, that's very unlikely, right? So even if they're experienced, I think a lot of times people think, oh, they've done this before, like they should ramp faster, but new market, new value prop, probably even working on some hypothesis of like who the best target is, what the best messaging is. So definitely factor in a reasonable ramp time there. But then how do we get the right people on the team? What are some things that we need to look for? What are some things that we need to consider when hiring?
So a few quick tips for anyone doing hiring to find good talent. First one is you want to play a little bit of a numbers game, which is you want the most amount of qualified candidates to be able to look at. But you don't want to spend a ton of time with all of them, because otherwise you're going to be like buried. I've done that, right? Like where I'm spending time reading through every resume, stuff like that. So here's one first quick hack. I'm a huge fan of using asynchronous communication in the interview process. Video. As the first stage of any interview process I'm going to run, I'm going to have the candidate answer the typical first five questions that I would ask in an interview over video, and then send it in to me. There's, by the way, a company that's built around this alone, where they just help organize all that. And yeah. What I'm asking is the basic questions of like, give me your highlights reel. Tell me what you want me to know about your history, your background. I like to know, hey, why are you leaving your current role? Or if you're not currently employed, what's going on? So I ask them to answer those two things. I do like the question of like, why this role at this company? Like, tell me a little bit more about what that means to you. And that's an opportunity for them to really shine and tell me like their X factor. And then, of course, I like the future oriented, like, tell me where you're heading. This is an indicator, if anyone's listening to this and I'm interviewing you, here's the answer. I'm looking for you to say something that sounds like it's going to fit in with where this role can take you. So if you say in 3 to 5 years, I'm going to be a top performing account executive at this company. I'm going to be selling. Great. Sales development's a great start. I'm going to be a wildly beloved and successful sales development manager. Great. This is a wonderful role for you. Something that makes sense as a transition from this role into the next.
Yeah. There's a few things I love about this because I've used a similar process in the past many times. And number one, you're going to weed out a lot of people that never reply. It was like, hey, they clearly don't want this job.
Yep.
The other thing is you now have them on camera. You can see, you know, how they conduct themselves, which is something that's important. And I think that the thing that is important there is you can see the type of answers that they give you, because you can see, are they just feeding me answers that they think I want to hear? Or, you know, and you can pick up on cues like, are they looking away when they're speaking? Are they making good eye contact? A little bit hard on camera, you know, rather than in person, but you can start to pick up if you think they're being truthful for the most part. Those are things that I look for. Of course, I care what they're answering, but I'm also seeing how they're answering and what those answers are. Do they seem genuine or do they seem like they're just great interviewers and they're telling me exactly what I want to hear?
One fun thing I like to do, and I've any manager that I've had the fortune of training and getting into leadership, I've taught them this approach. I play a game where, because especially in tech companies that are growing, there's a lot of hiring, so there's even more interviewing. I play a game of like score the candidate, and then 3 months, 6 months into the role, see if your scoring was in line with what you thought. So I like to play this game of like, try to predict if this person is where they're going to be in their performance in 3 to 6 months. What that does is, even though it takes time to develop that, it allows the manager to see what they missed and learn the lesson that they needed to learn. So the next time they're doing interviewing, which is almost always happening, you're able to be more aware of those pitfalls. So one thing that I learned once was, for someone who was a really good interviewer, really good, she had all the experience, on paper looked perfect, kind of answered all my questions well, but I had this gut feeling about her that wasn't great, but for some reason everything lined up. So I was like, I'm going to give her the shot. Floundered, struggled, didn't show up, had to let her go like 4 months into the role. What I learned in hindsight when I reviewed my notes was to trust my intuition when something feels off.
Yeah.
I was blinded by her previous experience that looked really good from a company that was a really good company logo. I was so blinded by that I was willing to ignore my intuition of like, huh, she seems kind of afraid of the phone, like a little timid. And she doesn't seem to be like really wanting this role, but she says she does. So something feels off here, but whatever. Like, she's from she has great background. Like, let's just go for it.
Yeah. two things for that. One, trust your intuition. I think you're spot on. Another hack is like, don't do deep dive into their experience before that first call. Like, a quick scan of their LinkedIn profile these days is sufficient. If they reply, you know, a quick scan of their LinkedIn profile to see if you even want to send them those video questions. And then once they send those video questions, you decide if you want to meet them. And at that point, you really haven't done a deep dive and looked at resume and all that other stuff, because, you know, I think that can make a big difference.
Oh, for sure. I had a former CRO who said to me, you need to always have a bench. Always have a bench of people you can hire. And what I learned about what he was trying to tell me, which is very valuable, is when you have people that are ready to go, or people that you've pre-vetted and you like, you feel a lot less of an attachment to low performers who have to go. You're ready to move on from them because you know you can backfill them. Or in the case of like, in my previous job, we were growing so fast, I actually sometimes needed to find three people overnight. And if I liked someone from a previous interview and they went through the process, I would say this to every candidate, and people who've interviewed with me have probably heard this. It's like, hey, sorry, we can't give you the offer now. If it's all right with you, I'd love to stay in touch. And if we have an opening again, I will actually reach out to you first, because it'll save me time. I won't have to go interview. And if you're still open to it, we'd love to give you the offer then. Is it all right if I stay in touch with you? And I've hired at least 5 or 6 people that way.
Yeah.
Saved me a whole cycle not having to go through it. So the interview, the video is a great hack. One thing to just be aware of is a form of interviewing called structured interviewing. And the idea is just to have a very similar approach to every candidate in order to have a fair comparison. There's some stuff around like implicit bias that goes into this, which is important to be aware of. But I'm a big fan of structured interviewing for a different reason. You know the scoreboard. It's like a game. Imagine if you're playing like a game of football, but there's two different rules for like both teams. The score is going to be really weird. So when it comes to interviewing, make sure you sit down with like 2 or 3 other people to think about what is the structure we want to have and why. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing exactly what you're looking for at which point in the phase. And the last thing here is use role plays. Stress test the skills. If you're okay with someone without experience, can you stress test the underlying character trait that leads to success in that skill? Classic example, I'm going to have my SDR cold call. You've never cold called before? No problem. How do you handle getting objections on a call? Are you going to just try to push through it, or are you going to fold? Because I want the people who naturally want to keep pushing through.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Ronan, it's been awesome having you back on the show. Really appreciate it. Any final thoughts, and where's the best place for people to connect with you?
I could geek out on this stuff all day. So if you want to chat some more about best practices around hiring or even just managing a team, come find me on LinkedIn, Ronan Pessar. I'd be more than happy to connect, especially if you're newer to leadership and you're really hell-bent on building a high-performance team.
Awesome. Appreciate it. We'll drop it in the show notes there. We'll also link the last episode Ronan was on as well, because there's tons of nuggets in there for sales leaders. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please write us a review, share the show with your friends so we can help more sellers and sales leaders transform the way that they sell.